Hour number two, it's Bickley and Murata here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, as we come to you live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. Always a pleasure to have our next guest on the show, and he is kind enough to join us again today. Co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, the one and only Trey Wingo joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Trey, how are you, man?
Good, guys. How are you? I kind of wish I was in Phoenix right now, as it's potential snow and about 33 degrees outside.
It's funny you say that, because I was just in my own special way complaining to my co-host before we went on the air. It's mid-November. I'm sick of these 90-degree days in the middle of the afternoon.
He was complaining about
our temp. Let's do a work swap for a week and see how we feel.
That's what I'm saying, man. But you know what? But what you have to realize is you can't hate on us, because the full-timers, not the snowbirds, the hell we live through in the summertime here, that also has to be experienced to be believed.
No, that's fair. I've played a few rounds of golf where I've actually said to myself, 108, hey, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, right. It's true.
I think in year one of the Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray era here in Arizona, there's been losses, but I don't think we've ever seen a loss as frustrating as the one that went down in Tampa on Sunday for a number of different reasons. We'll start with the one that's making the most waves, Trey, and that is the non-booth initiated review on what appeared to be pretty clear DPI on the last play of a game. Your thoughts on that?
Not even close. I think I tweeted that was a blatant DPI at the time when it happened. But you know, remember when they said they put in this rule that Hail Mary plays were not going to be part of this process. They want it to be a scrum at the end of the game, and I mean, part of me understands that, because you know, the idea of like going through that every time, frame by frame, and trying to figure something out, I understand the complexities of that, but that was so obvious. I mean, the whole point of this rule, right, was to get rid of the clear and obvious mistakes. And I had one former official tell me with the way this rule, which was put into place apparently to be only lip service only to a head coach and their fan base, I had one head coach tell me, I'm not sure if the former ref tell me, I'm not sure if the Nickell Robey Coleman play in the NFC Championship game that got this thing going, if that happened, that would even be overturned in the current climate.
Fair to ask. I agree with that. But that was so egregious, but so was what we saw on Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I've seen I was watching a Chiefs game where Andy Reid challenged, where Travis Kelce literally had his jersey ripped off him as he was running a route, and they didn't call it, and he challenged it, and they didn't say that was what it was. I mean, I'm beginning to think like decapitation would be the only thing that would allow something to be reversed.
So then you ask yourself, if they put in a rule to satisfy an outcry that came out of a playoff game only to ignore it, What does that tell you about the future of it? And just, isn't that a big fail for the competition committee?
Well, look, this is an experimental rule, right? And I think the experiment has been, we gave you what you want, but we're not changing what we do. So I agree. Okay. If you're not going to use it, why is it there? Would be my question. Did you do it to placate some people? Because if you did, fine. But just be honest about that, because right now they're not calling anything.
All right. Given the fact that the Cardinals now have turned a three-game winning streak into a three-game losing streak, are you still as bullish on their future? You still feel as positive about what they've got cooking out here?
Well, I mean, listen, this all really, if we're being honest, centers around the quarterback, right? Yes. I mean, all the other parts are movable, exchangeable. If you can't watch that game and watch some of the throws that Kyler made and not be excited about the things that he can do with the ball. But the other thing is, I mean, what is he? He's been sacked 31 times? Is that what it is? 31?
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah, which I think is the most in the league. Now, some of that is clearly on the offensive line. Some of that is him holding onto the ball too long. But it goes to the point that I don't think you're ever going to find a quarterback outside of Lamar Jackson at the moment who's going to be so elusive that the rush isn't going to get to him no matter how fast he is. So the most thing that I would be happy about if I'm a Cardinals fan is seeing the throws that this guy can make. And the thing at Oklahoma that people forget, they like to think he ran around all the time. Most of his throws were from the pocket. He is a very, despite his stature. He is actually a very, very good pocket passer, and that's the way, outside of the anomaly of Lamar Jackson as it's presently existing, that's the way for long-term success in the NFL.
Trey Wingo, co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, which you can hear every morning on ESPN 620 AM here in Phoenix. He joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Last one on the Cardinals before we move on to the rest of the league, Trey. Do you have any explanation for what you are seeing, or more to the point, not seeing from David Johnson at this point? He just looks like a different player altogether.
He looks like a running back that's taken a lot of hits. I mean, this is on the day that Disney Plus is released, I mean, a tale as old as time, right? I mean, this is the way it goes. I mean, he looks like he's been nicked up a lot. I mean, the other day when Chase Edmonds got all the carries in the game against the Giants, it was clear that David Johnson wasn't healthy then. And then they went through and tried out 500 running backs before you signed Kenyon Drake or got the trade for Kenyon Drake. He doesn't look healthy. It's just that simple to me.
All right, let me ask you, let's move on to the NFC West last night. There was a highly entertaining game last night. What did you take away from that? Did Russell Wilson give ground to Lamar Jackson in the MVP race? Did he gain ground? Did he surge ahead? What did you take out of last night's game?
Well, from my perspective, it's hard to lose ground in a game in which you led your team to a game-winning
right.
overtime drive by being Houdini. Now, that being said, he threw, I believe, the first red zone interception in his career. I have to look that up, but I
wow.
think that's accurate.
Well,
it was the first overtime red zone interception in 25 years. So I don't think he ceded ground. I think he just some of those plays. My God,
I mean,
the pocket was collapsing around him. It proved he's still Houdini. Okay. And when they get Josh Gordon going with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, who I haven't heard the injury update yet on him from last night, but if those three guys are going to be there together, he's not slowing down anytime soon. To me, the biggest takeaway from that game, and by the way, the Niners could have easily won that game, so I'm not
yes.
basing this on results, okay? Because if Robbie Gould is the kicker for the Niners, I believe the Niners probably won that game
mm-hmm.
because the rookie Chase McLaughlin wouldn't have, yanked one into the water off 18, like we've all done when you're one down or one up trying to protect the lead
yeah.
in the match. That's exactly what that was. But win or lose, the takeaway from this game is there are still doubts about Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, that's where I was going with it. And a lot of the and Jimmy Garoppolo, we got a chance to see him up close and personal in the Thursday night game here in Arizona. His best
right.
game is a 49er. But, again,
correct.
Put an asterisk by it. You're going up against the Cardinals' pass defense, which has been generous to everybody. Do you believe
yeah.
the 49ers can make noise, can win it all with Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback?
I think that there's enough around him that's certainly in the NFC, absolutely. I mean, look, the Saints football is just weird, right? We were all trying to figure out how the Falcons beat the Saints, and we all looked at each other and said, it's just football. That's the way it happens sometimes, Team was desperate coming off a bye. The other team might have gotten a little fat and happy. So, I mean, there's no one team that I look at in the NFC and say, boy, they're head and shoulders above everybody. There are about five really, really good teams, and the Niners are one of those teams. And, Emmanuel Sanders went out in that game last night, and Emmanuel Sanders is such a professional receiver. I mean, there's no words to put on it other than that. He's not dynamic like some of the speedsters. He's just a professional chain mover. And when he went out of that offense, because Jimmy and he, the first two games that they'd been together, he caught a touchdown pass in each game. And you guys saw the big plays he made against you guys in that Thursday night contest. Mm-hmm. Him going out, I think, was a real detriment to Jimmy G's chances last night. So let's assume that he's not long-term issue with the rib. I think that there is enough around Jimmy. Like, Jimmy's not going to be the reason they win. He just got to make sure he's not the reason they lose.
What do you think is going on with the L.A. Rams? I thought they were going to struggle this year. Most teams that lose the Super Bowl tend to have some sort of hangover effect. I did not see them losing to a Steelers team without Ben Roethlisberger. What do you think's happening with that offense, Trey?
Or put another way, I didn't see them putting up only a field goal.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the
right.
touchdown came off Dante Fowler
right.
and the other safety because Aaron Donald is the baddest man on the MF planet. So the thing, there are two thoughts, right? Is Jared Goff regressing to the norm, which what he was before Sean McVay got there, or has the league caught up to Sean McVay a little bit, right? I mean, because all these people come in with their concepts and all these things, and, Cliff is going to go through this at some point. then you get film on what this team does and what they like to do, what the head coach likes to do, and they're going to try and take that away from you. And then the question becomes, what else you got? And that, to me, is why Bill Belichick will always be the outlier, because I don't think he looks at a team and says, what do we do well? I think every week Bill goes into that meeting with his coaches and says, the team we're playing, what do they do well? What do they do poorly? And those are the things that we're going to do on Sunday. It's sort of the opposite, right? It's not like this is who we are, this is our strength, this is what we do. Who are we playing? Mm-hmm. How can we negotiate against what they do poorly and well to our advantage? And I think that Sean's going through a process. I mean, this guy was so young when he took over, and he had a meteoric rise. I still think he's a very good coach, but the essence of coaching is finding out another way to do something after what you've been doing has been successful. Yep.
Trey Wingo, co-host of Golic and Wingo, our guest here on Bickley and Murata. You mentioned all the good teams in the NFC, Trey, and it is deep. There's a lot of good teams in that conference. There's some good teams over in the AFC right now, but I think it's an interesting question. 10 weeks into the season, do you have a clear-cut feel on who is the best team in the NFL right now?
You know, I would have gone a long way towards saying the Saints before Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they won, what, 5 games with their backup quarterback?
Sure.
That's almost impossible unless your backup quarterback is Tom Brady coming in for Drew Bledsoe in 2001.
Yeah.
I mean, that just doesn't happen, right? It just doesn't exist. And I think Sean Payton is a hell of a coach. And I think he kind of knew it, by the way, because the things he was saying to his team all week was like, don't be deceived by their 1-7 record. Don't be this. I think he felt like his team was getting a little cocky, and he tried to stop it. And that's why he was so angry, I think, on the sidelines during that game. I mean, I really don't. I mean, look, San Francisco is still a really good team.
Yeah.
And I think that their defense and their running game is going to carry them a long, long way. Seattle obviously is going to be in it because of Russell Wilson and the magic that he has. Now, they still have some issues on the defensive side, which is kind of funny, right? Because when they were winning all those games in Seattle, when Russell was young, it was because the defense carried the way and the offense just sort of ran the ball with Marshawn and Russell made a few plays. Now Russell is a magician. And the defense is sort of outside of Clowney, who was just a beast last night, is just sort of there. And
yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Trey, but I was totally vibing on what you said about Jadeveon Clowney. He was just, I think he had, 10 quarterback pressures last night? Some absurd number like that?
Yeah, and by the way, the sack is the most overrated stat in all of football. Not that it's not a bad thing, but it's not necessarily an arbiter of how good someone is or how bad an offensive lineman is. A sack is just taking somebody to the ground.
Yeah.
What Jadeveon Clowney did last night was as every good as a 3 or 4 or 5 sack game.
Yeah.
He was a constant disruptive force, you know, and that's when we talk about pressure, what we want to do is throw the quarterback off his spot, you know, make him have second thoughts. And I certainly think that was a big part of Jimmy G had some really happy feet, especially in that overtime and late in that fourth quarter, because he knew this guy's been in my grill all damn night, and I want to make sure I don't see that freak in my face.
Yeah, right. All right, last thing real quick. A team that's cooking with oil right now would be the Baltimore Ravens. How much do you believe in what they're doing?
Well, I believe that they have, look, as far as a team construct goes, it's perfect, right? Because who's Lamar Jackson's backup quarterback?
RG3. Yeah.
In 2012, RG3 was Lamar Jackson. I mean, he was the guy that took everybody by storm. Because, he made throws, but mainly because he ran. Now, to me, Lamar Jackson is RG3 2.0 or Michael Vick 2.0. I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback with crossover ankle-breaking skills like we talk about with NBA point guards or shooting guards, right, that keep people so off their feet. Is it sustainable over a 5 to 7 year stretch? I don't know the answer to that. But he is – I mean, you can't hit what you can't catch. And so far, no one's been able to catch him. But then again, remember, Michael Vick missed an entire season because he broke his leg on a hit in a preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
My only fear about this is that it's going to work until that guy is knocked out of the game. And it hasn't happened yet, so it's amazing. And he's doing things that are very different. But, you know, I've always said this, and I will believe this as long as I'm watching and covering football. You always see a lot of young running quarterbacks. You never see a lot of old ones.
Yeah, that's true. Trey, thanks so much again for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
You got it, guys. So when are we doing that swap? Because I need to know, because I got a lot of shorts to pack in the golf bag.
I gotta look at the weather.com before I commit to anything.
Yeah, there
How's
you
that
go.
Sound?
Thank you, Trey.
Trey Wingo, ESPN Radio co-host of Golic and Wingo, joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter, your family-owned dealership for Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti.
Suns get Booker for a long three.
Suzanne!
The zone defense is not working for Brooklyn, Al.
102-73.
That was one of the highlights from Sunday night. Devin Booker kind of just doing what he wanted. In a four-game stretch right now is Devin Booker. Not like the four-game stretch we saw last year where he scored over 60 and threatened again. Got 59 against the Jazz, and I might be a little off on the numbers. But he went through that scoring streak at the end of the year where you're just like, is he unstoppable? Right now, what he is doing in terms of efficiency, shooting over 55% from the floor, over 50% from three-point range, over 90%. That's through nine games. There's only three other players that have done that with a certain sample size in the history of the game, and they're Larry Bird, Steph Curry, and Ray Allen. So it's pretty rare company to be in.
Yeah.
People are noticing, Bick.
Yes, they are.
Which is good. The NBA's 2020 MVP race sleepers, an article that appears this morning on Bleacher Report, .com, written by Zach Buckley. First name on the list, Devin Booker, Phoenix Suns. I'll add my own little editorial note here.
All right.
It's incredibly early, way too early for my taste, but way too early doesn't apply to other people in the media landscape of 2019.
No.
Way too early is currency.
Well,
now.
And keep in mind, it's also relevant when every game they play at home now, he's getting the chance from the home crowd. So whether or not we think it's relevant or not, it's not affecting the way the home crowd is acting toward him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that in and of itself is kind of validation. But listen, I was reading in L.A. about this, that Danny Green has been tasked with the idea of stopping Devin Booker. I rarely even think about that anymore. Devin Booker's the point now where he's just pretty much unguardable with his array of stuff. His ability to finish among the rim. I told you, or at least I said a lot last year, that in 2018-2019, the big change in Devin Booker to me was how easily he now beat players off the dribble and got to the basket. Mm-hmm. He's among the best at finishing now around the basket.
Well, another thing that I've noticed a lot, too, is just the backing down, getting down low, backing down, and muscling his way to buckets inside, too, which we had seen a little bit of, but I think we've seen it more consistently this year. That's a testament to how hard he works in the weight room in the offseason as well.
Yeah, it's a good point.
This note from Buckley on Bleacher Report, suddenly Booker's on course to become the fourth 25-point scoring member of the 50-40-90 club. Think about that, to average that many points.
Mm-hmm.
That club, by the way, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Larry Bird did it twice, and now Devin Booker's on pace to do it. And at 73 games, a lot has to happen. But people were worried about Devin Booker's three-point percentage last year because it was low 30s. He's a better shooter than that. You know, I wonder what the percentage of those shots were off the dribble where he was creating for himself.
Yeah. Right.
He's had so many more opportunities just to be an open shooter because of better, improved team-wide ball movement. But like I said, people are noticing.
He's third best in the NBA in three-point shooting percentage. Who is better than him? I know that his 53.2% ranks third in the NBA. I'm curious to see who's above him.
Yeah,
the numbers are sick. 25.8 points per game. Then you look at his efficiency, over 50% from the field, from two-point and three-point territory, 70% at getting to the rim, and 93% at free throw shooting. That's about as efficient as you get.
The two above him, Myers Leonard of Miami, who's shooting an ungodly 64.7% right now from a center position.
Wow.
And George Hill of Milwaukee, 57.7. Devin Booker, 53.2.
Wow. Okay.
And Booker is averaging double the amount of attempts that George Hill is per game, over five per game.
And now he's got LeBron coming to town. And you know what these big stages elicit in Devin Booker before. That's why part of my excitement tonight isn't just seeing the collective, what this group of Suns can do. It's what that guy's going to do.
Mm-hmm. But what you can ask yourself the question, you mean what LeBron is going to do or what Booker going to do?
What Booker's going to
do. But on the flip side, you can ask the question, what's LeBron going to do? And what does his workload look like? I still have not seen an update on Anthony Davis's status. He re-aggravated a shoulder injury in the loss to Toronto the other night. So they might take it easy with him. I would like to see AD on the court. I think it's a true barometer, a more true barometer on where the Suns are as a team.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's life in the NBA. If you go through and just monitor who misses games on a night-to-night basis, you're gonna run into big names every single night. So you just got to play who's on your schedule, and you got to play who's on the court in terms of your opposition.
That's true. That's a good point.
The next name on that list on Bleacher Report, though, by the way, is Luka Doncic.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I knew. There's a corollary to all that.
There's this crazy thing going on Suns Twitter these days.
Yeah.
Where a lot of people talk about Luka Doncic and then get accused of longing after Luka Doncic. He's not coming here. They had an opportunity to draft him and they didn't do it. Will it turn out to be a mistake? Maybe. Someday. I'm not willing to call DeAndre Ayton Sam Bowie. I'm not willing to do it. Luka Doncic looks like he has every ingredient to be a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
Tip of the cap to him.
Mm-hmm.
But it was it seemed like a no-brainer for the Suns at the time. Did it not?
No. I was one.
Kellen Olsen's going to charge in like the Kool-Aid man in 5 seconds.
To the very end, said they should draft Luka Doncic. I remember
he was the one guy.
I remember saying that Luka Doncic was a lot better than people said. You remember Gambo was the one telling everybody that Luka Doncic was so emotionally weak he was crying at the end of games. Okay, there were people who were that down on Luka Doncic. I wasn't one of those. I thought Luka Doncic was going to be a star. But I did, at the end of it all, say the Suns should take DeAndre Ayton. I was not on the fence about who they should take.
Well,
so I'm in the camp, too. I endorse DeAndre Ayton.
Ayton's absence, and maybe because it's due to suspension, is kind of lighting a match on this whole thing, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because we haven't had a chance to see what second-year DeAndre Ayton looks like outside of one game, which he played pretty well. Now, if he was averaging 24 and 12 right now, I don't think people would be longing for Luka Doncic.
No, I know that. Yes, I do agree with that. But I also, like I said, I didn't see any videos from DeAndre Ayton playing over the summer. So I don't know. I don't know exactly where that improvement is going to come from.
That could simply mean nobody was filming him.
No, it could be. Could very well be. Good, and very well.
I did see videos of him playing over the summer.
You did?
Yeah. Shooting threes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Did you see a lot of videos of Luka Doncic playing over the summer?
Yeah, I didn't look for him. But I'm sure he did. Wasn't he playing in the World Cup?
I don't know. Did he play in the World Cup? I'd have to look that. I didn't pay too much attention to the World Cup, quite honestly. Was right on the cusp of the NBA season.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
And it was hard to find. All right, coming up next Tuesday, we'll have a round of Mock My World straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Uh-oh, we might have a unanimous poll question. I haven't looked at the results today. Today's Sanderson Ford poll question on ArizonaSports.com, Bick. Should the NFL keep pass interference reviewable after this season, yes or no?
Yeah, no. Nah.
40% of the people that responded read that question and said yes? What is going on here? We have that many Saints fans in our audience?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, we need to change that percentage. So go ahead and vote. Log on now. Sanderson Ford poll question on the front page of ArizonaSports.com.
Bickley and Murata. Mock My World.
Are you mocking me? Are you mocking me? Stop it. You just didn't do it again.
Are you mocking me?
It is that time. Tuesdays, we roll out an edition of Mock My World here on Bickley and Murata. That's where the four members of the show, myself, Dan Bickley, Jarrett Carlin, Eric Cohen, will have a four-round snake-style draft on the category of the week. Last week's results, Jarrett Carlin, a big runaway victory on the subject of sports bucket list items you want to view.
I'm surprised I won that.
Yeah.
So am I.
World Series Game 7, Kentucky Derby, heavyweight title, boxing match, Super Bowl. I got 45% of the vote. Bickley, you finished second. I finished a distant fourth, as Sarah Cazell finished 18%. I'm okay with that result because I was true to myself on that one.
You had two college basketball events, too.
I did.
Soccer and a tennis.
Yeah. I can't help people. I got different viewpoints than other people. This week's category, I think, is a pretty interesting one.
All right.
It is athletes from the past. Could be from the far past. It could be from the recent past.
They could be retired. They could be deceased.
Retired or deceased, that if you would most like to see plugged into their modern day sports in the prime of their career.
Like it. Like the way you presented that.
All right. Is that too confusing?
Got it.
Everybody got it?
Absolutely.
A few more times, Vinny.
Got it.
It's a very long title, so I don't want to take that much more time.
Put it on Twitter, but all right,
Random.org generated the draft order. Defending champion Jarrett Carlin will go number one.
Of course
he
will.
Going two. I will go third, and you will go fourth. Snake style, so you get two picks on the end of the first round and so forth. Go ahead, Jarrett. Start it off.
I'm going to start with a guy who, because of the way the defense was called or not called in his era, just imagine Michael Jordan in today's game.
Is that spelled
J-O-R-D-O-N?
D-O-N. Jordan. Yeah, I think I've heard of him. Yeah, that's not obvious. It might be over at this point.
No, we'll see.
Eric Cohen.
He had a 100-point game way back when. I'd like to see what he could do now. Wilt Chamberlain.
That is a good pick as well.
Although the center position, it's a different game. He can't exactly shoot threes.
Yeah, would Wilt Chamberlain be like Andre Drummond today? It's a fair question.
Yeah, it is.
It's a fair question.
Good point.
My first pick, I'm definitely going tennis here. No, I'm going with some people believed to be the greatest player of all time. In baseball, Babe Ruth.
Yeah, that would be a good one to kind of see what the deal is with him,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Analytics, the shift.
Yeah.
Nutrition.
Yeah, right.
Exercise.
Social media.
Uh-huh. Right. Right, exactly.
That might be an absolute disaster, but it'd be fun to watch.
You got two, Dan?
Okay, give me... I would love to see... I'm going to do a couple of boxers here. I'm going to take Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson.
Imagine Ali with the way that media is now. Oh,
yeah, goodness. But you know what?
And then I just
the quality of the heavyweight division, those guys would be dominant.
Yeah.
It'd be very...
They'd have to fight each other, which would be kind of cool. It wouldn't just be a video game fight anymore.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I want Ali back for the personality, and I just want to see Mike Tyson fight again just for the intimidate, that raw fury.
Yeah. I'm picking one, and I'm going to pick the name that spurred this whole thought in my head and coming up with this concept for this week. Pistol Pete Maravich. He's a guy, obviously I know about him. I've read about him. Never saw him play in person or on television. And it's legendary stuff. I'd love to see it. So Maravich is my pick there.
No, he was razzle dazzle in an era when he was like the only guy doing it.
Mm-hmm. Eric Cohen.
Don't have to go too far back to remember when he played, but talked about as one of the greatest of all time, Wayne Gretzky. Greatest of the greats.
You took my next pick.
Yeah, I had him too.
Would Wayne Gretzky have like 200 points in a season now?
Wow.
I don't think so, but...
Yeah, nobody even has 100 points now.
It's pretty rare. Not like it used to be.
All right, I'm going to go with another basketball player, same era as Michael Jordan, but sort of LeBron James style of play before LeBron James, Magic Johnson. And now that, you know, these kind of point guards do everything kind of point guards in positionless basketball, I'd love to see him play nowadays. And because it'd be hilarious, because sports gambling is so easy to do now, I would love to see Pete Rose play nowadays.
Brother.
And especially a guy who would be either totally into analytics or completely against it.
It's still illegal to gamble in baseball,
I know,
Jarrett.
But that's what I'm saying. But it's so much easier now to do that he'd get even more trouble.
Or it'd be harder to catch him.
Yeah.
Eric.
All right, I'm hoping the bias here doesn't get me, but I would love to see Jerry Rice play, only for the mere fact that if he's as great as he was then as he is now, him and Fitz going, you know, essentially side by side at the same time as two all-time great wide receivers, that'd be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't ever that exciting of a player, even when he was great.
I'm going to go with, on my third round pick, I'm going to go with a two-sport guy, Bo Jackson. I'd love to see him in today's NFL. and Major League Baseball, but mostly the NFL.
Yeah.
Vic, you got two picks to close out your team.
Yeah, okay. Give me, I'd like to see Dan Marino play quarterback in this day and age, and I'd like to
I'll
see...
imagine the numbers he put up.
Oh, my goodness. And I'd like to see Jackie Robinson play baseball.
Ooh, that's a good pick.
Your last pick, Vinny?
You guys might scoff at this one, but I have reason behind it.
Uh-huh.
Because he was just at the edge of this movement. If Steve Nash played in today's NBA with a green light to shoot, like shooters have now, what would that look like? I'm going with Steve Nash.
That's a good one. Eric, last pick?
All right, last pick. One of the all-time greats also, so I might as well. Secretariat. He'd probably run laps around all these lazy horses nowadays.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Double-decker buses you've been put on warning here. I'm going to go with a guy who, this is almost sort of another, not necessarily because of his greatness, although he is a Hall of Famer, to see if he would become Johnny Manziel or Baker Mayfield 2.0. I would love to see Joe Namath in today's NFL.
Ooh, that's a pretty interesting one. If you look at Joe Namath's stats, you'll be completely underwhelmed. But it was a different,
I totally agree with that.
It was a different sport altogether.
Totally agree with that.
All right, so our picks have been made. Jarrett's team on athletes he'd like to plug into modern day. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Pete Rose, Joe Namath, Eric at Wilt Chamberlain, Wayne Gretzky, Jerry Rice, and Secretariat. I got Babe Ruth, Pete Maravich, Bo Jackson, and Steve Nash. Bick's got Muhammad Ali, Mike Tyson, Dan Marino, Jackie Robinson. Four pretty interesting teams.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah, we'll get this up on Twitter at Bickley_Murata. You vote. You determine the winner. It's Mock My World. We do it every Tuesday here on the show. Coming up next, classic Monday Night Football game. Maybe the game of the year in the NFL last night took place in Santa Clara, and there's no more undefeateds left. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley.
Do you have hair coming out of your ears?
Vince Murata.
I'm obsessed with ear hair.
Bickley and Murata.
That's cool. You know, I get weird like that.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Fires, steps back. At the 45, waits for the snap. Michael Dixon puts it down. That kick is away. And that kick is good! The Seahawks win! It's good! From 42, the Seahawks in overtime win for the second time in 2 weeks, and they beat the undefeated, now once defeated, San Francisco 49ers. What a game on Monday Night Football. The Seahawks win in overtime, and Jason Myers does it. What a game.
Craziest game I've ever been a part of. I mean, yeah, talking about a Monday Night Football game, it felt like NFC Championship game right there. Just back and forth, two great teams going after it. Get the ball in overtime and go down. We're moving the ball really well. I think I have Hollister for a touchdown, and they make a great play. 2 inches higher, I think we have a touchdown, game over. Then our defense goes out there, stops them, and then they miss the field goal. We get the ball back, whatever, and find a way to win.
Yeah, that's the way it sounded on our sister station, 710 ESPN in Seattle, the final moments on Jason Myers' game-winning field goal from 42 yards. Then you hear Russell Wilson, probably the front runner for NFL MVP after his performance, where he did throw a rare interception, only his second pick he's thrown all season long, and it looked like it was coming at a time where the Seahawks were going in for the winning touchdown to nail things shut on the first possession of overtime. I don't disagree with that assertion. Some people might hear Russell Wilson say, that seemed like the NFC Championship. Watching that game, the physicality,
yeah,
the brutality of the hits, the effort level, the back and forth, just when I thought the Seahawks had the game iced away, I mean, Wilson fumbles, Jermaine Ifedi fumbles on the same play, San Francisco takes it in for a defensive score. I mean, that game was crazy, but it did feel like that level of intensity.
Now, we've had two primetime NFC West games this year that I know of, that I watched, and both have been absolutely terrific.
Yeah, the Seattle Rams game,
Seattle Rams game was also absolutely terrific, and it kind of speaks to what's going on here. 49ers and the Seahawks, they've had a real heated rivalry for a while. Legion of Boom, when Richard Sherman was on the other side, all of that. I thought last night was so compelling for a lot of different reasons. Number one, 49ers defense was insanely good. Seahawks defense rose to the occasion. Russell Wilson was fairly amazing, and I thought that, see, my vantage point, and you and I were looking at it a little bit differently. I've got Lamar Jackson surging ahead of Russell Wilson barely in the MVP race, and I thought Russell Wilson was getting it all back until that interception, and I thought, ooh, that's really, really costly. Then you got this McLaughlin kid who lived the most unbelievable night as an emergency, in case of emergency, break glass kind of place kicker. He kicked three field goals, two of them very, very high leverage. And then he had a fourth to win the game, and he just snap-hooked it, shanked it badly.
It was bad. There was a video of somebody standing in one of the tunnels off to the side, and yeah, the ball actually landed in the tunnel. That's how far... That's how far away it was really, from the goalpost. It was a hilarious video. Yeah.
Oh man, and you wanted to feel bad for the guy, but if you were, he gave that team, he gave the 49ers probably more than they had the right to expect. He gave them a couple of game time kicks in the second half before that miss. So you know what? They can't be hating on him too much. You had this monstrous game from Jadeveon Clowney. It was about as disruptive a game as a defensive lineman as I have ever seen. And I've seen a lot. I think you've heard me talk about Chandler Jones and his sacks versus pressures. Jadeveon Clowney had a night last night where just nobody could block him, and he was just a holy terror all night long. So it all came down to really, I mean, I've never seen an overtime feature that many possessions.
No, Seattle got three possessions.
Yeah.
And I tweeted it out. You can't give Russell Wilson three chances in overtime and live to tell about it, can you?
No. And then after the second one, when Pete Carroll chose to punt on a fourth and two.
I thought the same thing.
Same thing.
Like, what are you doing?
What are you doing, man? Why are you not playing to win?
You got the MVP on your team. Have him make a play for
you. What are you doing?
Get the 2 yards and keep the chains moving.
Yeah, but that's exactly what I was thinking as well.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah, clearly.
And we talked to Trey Wingo about a couple of these issues. Jimmy Garoppolo's numbers were not horrible. I don't think he got a ton of help from his receivers last night. There seemed to be a lot of drop balls on that side. But there was also not a lot of downfield stuff for San Francisco. And we, up close and personal, saw Jimmy Garoppolo feast on a really bad Cardinals pass defense. He looked like an all-pro against the Cardinals. But the Cardinals have made everybody pretty much look good. I mean, Jameis Winston threw for 358 against them, for goodness sake.
Yeah. See, there you go.
So when the opposition changes and the intensity of the defense changes, I think last night was a truer indication of the quarterback that right now Jimmy Garoppolo is. Is that good enough for San Francisco? Because their running game might be good enough.
Such a great question.
Their defense might be good enough.
It's such a great question because you're right. I don't know if you noticed this during the game last night. It seemed like one of the announcers was just ripping apart Jimmy Garoppolo whenever possible, looking how shaky he looks, how skittish he looks, and then just propping up Russell Wilson. And I thought, okay, maybe I'm seeing it a little bit differently, but that's the difference in these two teams. Where if you took that 49er team that seems to have pretty much everything, do you trust that quarterback to win you at least a couple of playoff games? I don't know how you can, even with that vaunted record of his.
Well, Garoppolo's record as a starter now in his NFL career is 16-3.
Yeah.
How many of those 16 wins are because of Jimmy Garoppolo?
Yeah. Not many.
And it sounds like an unfair way maybe to gauge it, but it comes down to quarterback play a lot of times in the playoffs. Not saying they're done, but there are a lot of people this morning, and I was like getting ready for work and listening to a lot of the talking heads on ESPN, a lot of people believe that Seattle asserted themselves as the team to beat now in the NFC. I don't know if I'm there yet either.
You could say right now, we've seen this in the NFL seasons. Okay, we're 10 weeks in the books. If you were going to make a case for teams that have fired hot, maybe peaked too early, you might say the New Orleans Saints peaked too early. You might say the Baltimore Ravens are peaking too early. The Seahawks are one of these teams historically that have always kind of put it together in the back halves of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Curious to see where this one goes.
And they've been adding players throughout the season to get even better.
They have been. Now, this injury to Tyler Lockett, that's not a... I mean, this guy plays a big role in that offense.
Yeah, he was hospitalized overnight with
what
they called a severe injury, severe swelling. Seattle Times reported within the hour that Pete Carroll says Tyler Lockett should be okay. What that means for the immediate future, because he's a big part of what they do. But even Josh Gordon, he had a couple of big catches in that game last night.
Right.
That was
two teams. He certainly did.
Two teams I don't like a bit, but man, that game lived up to the hype. Just kind of like, not as hyped as Alabama LSU, certainly, that lived up to the hype.
We mentioned this coming out of the show because you and I both had the same experience that in watching the game, we both found ourselves cheering for the Seahawks, which was kind of weird. And I think it feels weird. It feels dirty.
I need a wet nap.
But to me, it's a lesser two evils. Know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know what I mean?
No, because part of it, too, is you feel like, okay, Seattle's already established themselves as a good franchise. They've been there for a while. They've got the established quarterback. You can kind of come to terms with the fact that they're a good team.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with another NFC team rising from the ashes and being good Super Bowl quality. That's what San Francisco's threatening to do right now. Keep them down. Now it's up to the Cardinals to keep them down on Sunday.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Right. That's right.
The Bickley Blast is straight ahead. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.